Middle East on the brink. North Korea on the brink. Iran increasing its aggression. Elections in Taiwan. Look, there's a lot of global instability as we ourselves plunge into primary season. How have you sheltered your savings and investments from potential major setbacks to the economy? You think it can happen here? It can happen here, but it's not too late to diversify an old IRA or 401k into gold. And Birch Gold Group can help you with that. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. As opposed to many other investments, gold thrives in times of uncertainty. It is an important part of diversifying your savings. Now listen, here's how Birch Gold can help make it a part of yours. Birch Gold will help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. You want to learn more? Just text SAVAGE to 989898 for a free info kit. S-A-V-A-G-E, text it to 989898 and you get a free info kit. It costs you nothing. Just text SAVAGE to 989898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers, I encourage you to arm yourself with the knowledge of diversification through precious metals. Protect yourself. Text SAVAGE to 989898 and claim your free info kit. Protect your savings with gold. Do it now. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Thank you very much. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. Text SAVAGE to 989898.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
I know many of you have requested an ad-free version of the Savage Nation podcast. Well, how would you like to join this exclusive club that I'm starting up now? It's dedicated to borders, language, and culture. You already listen to the Savage Nation podcast, and I really appreciate that. We're making a difference. Well, now there's a new offer I'm going to tell you about. After months of careful consideration and preparation, we've come up with a premium offering called the Savage Exclusive. What does it include? 100% commercial-free podcast, no ads. 26 years of the most requested Savage shows and portions of shows. The great monologues, the poems, the stories, the nutty callers, exclusive Savage soliloquies, and the Savage library of shows, some of which date back to 1994 on KSFO. You're not going to believe this. We're going to give you the most requested Savage shows of the past, such as The Death Poem, The First Savage Trump Interview, White Male Inventions, Apathy and Jazz, and many, many more. Plus, you're going to get fresh, original Michael Savage features you cannot hear on the basic podcast, such as a look behind the scenes of how we actually make a podcast, all of us talking with each other, readings from my novels and books, travels around my hometown, as I tell you what it's like to walk through San Francisco today. All of the above for less than the cost of one drink in a bar per month. So listen, if you still believe in borders, language, and culture as the guiding principles of this great nation, as I do, please consider joining the Savage Exclusive Club. Please know we will never dilute the basic podcast you get on your podcast service every week with my news, views, reviews, and special topics. If you did not join the exclusive club, you will still get the basic podcast absolutely free. Details will be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com. There's lots more for me to tell you about. I'm going to give you a link right now. And if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm/savagepremium. 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 If you click on it, you're going to see a cartoon of me. Join Savage's exclusive club with the rate, and you just click and you join. You're going to love it. I appreciate it very much. I hope you join the Savage Exclusive Club. Thank you for listening. Let's start with the basics. We all know Netanyahu lost because of a weird coalition. And as you will hear, the coalition is held together on the shakiest of grounds. None of the segments of this coalition have a great popularity. Nevertheless, he's gone. And the right and the left and the Arabs and the communists have all joined together. And whether or not they can hold us together for very long, nobody really knows. Let's just say one thing now. Many people say that there was peace in the Middle East until the new Israel was forged. We all know Israel is biblical. We all know Jews have a presence in that area going back 5,000 years at least. But the new Israel was controversial when it was formed in 1947 by the United Nations, or ratified by the United Nations. And there's been nothing but strife ever since. So many people, conservatives as well as liberals, say, you know, it'd be better off if there was no Israel. Well, it doesn't matter what you say. The Jews are not going anywhere. Whether you want them gone or not, it's like saying you should be out of America so the Indians could take over the country. It's not happening. So learn to live with the fact that Jews live in the Middle East and they're not going anywhere. And stop with the crap already that the Jews should leave. They're not going anywhere any more than you're leaving, unless you want to leave and give it over to the Native Americans who your ancestors stole it from. So having said that, we're going to look at this in great detail today, much more detail than normal. And we're speaking with a man who knows really everything about this that you could ever imagine. I was very lucky to get him today. It's an astounding luck that I got Aaron Klein, who was senior advisor to Prime Minister Netanyahu, campaign manager for Netanyahu's election campaign for the 21 election, chief strategist for Netanyahu's successful 2020 election campaign. I know Aaron. I've had dinner with Aaron. He's a wonderful guy, and you're going to love the interview. So let's listen and see what you think on the Savage Nation podcast. Hey, Aaron.
Long time.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's great to finally speak to you again.
Well, you've been in the Holy Land for so long, you become a holy man.
Yeah, exactly.
So turmoil, I'm saying, here's how I'm phrasing this cataclysm. King David is gone. To me, Netanyahu, despite his flaws, was like a King David. He kept his people safe. He navigated the tricky waters of the world. And of course, like all great men, he had his flaws, which we don't have to discuss. And the man coming in, America knows nothing about him. We've read about Naftali, that he himself is a member of the special forces. He's also the real McCoy, hard as nails, was the right-hand man to Netanyahu. So what does this all mean, Aaron, from your... You live there, you... Mr. Netanyahu, for how long now?
By the way, are we recording now?
Yeah, we've been recording, Aaron. So I do that as a prelude. That was the prelude.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know that we began.
Okay, see, I make it so natural you don't even know we're doing a recording.
That's great. Okay, great. Yeah, sorry. So I'm ready to go again. I didn't know.
You lived in Israel for how long now, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I've been living in Israel for about 15 years, first as a foreign reporter and radio host. And then I started working for Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu, about 2 years ago. And I've been, ever since, I've been working for him as his strategic advisor, senior advisor, and then heads of his last two campaigns.
Unbelievable. So no one could get more inside than you. And we've met here in California. I mean, we know each other personally from a long time ago.
Yeah. Not only do we know each other and my brother interviews you, I actually, for the last like 15 years, when I go running, which is about twice a week, I listen to all of your podcast.
You're one of the five listeners in Israel. I'm joking. No, there's quite a few. But Aaron, look, seriously, this is a big deal. So they cobbled together a coalition. They engineered Netanyahu out. Some could argue he was in for too long. There should have been term limits. But let's put that aside. What does this mean for the U.S.? The average listener today in America wants to know, what does this mean? Because on the way out, Netanyahu yesterday gave a heck of a scorched earth speech against Biden. What do you think it means?
I mean, first of all, it's not that he was in there so-called for too long and the people didn't have a say. He was elected and reelected and reelected again. And, you know, first, let's just look at where this new coalition came from and whether it indeed represents the will of the voters. Mm. I believe that it doesn't. You have Naftali Bennett, who's now the prime minister. He, when he was running for office, first, by the way, in the previous election, he basically didn't cross the threshold, and then to get into the Knesset, meaning he didn't have enough votes, and then there was a recount, and he like just squeaked by like 1,500 votes. And then in this past election, he ran on a platform. And when I say platform, I mean he signed a document in a dramatic way live on television, pledging not to form a government with Yair Lapid as prime minister. Lapid is like a center left figure here in politics in Israel. And Naftali Bennett runs on a platform, first, of not forming a government with him, of not creating a rotating government, meaning Lapid would be prime minister. And then he said it so many times to his voters and then signs it on television. And then he goes and right after the election, he runs and he does the one thing that was one of his central pledges in the election to his voters, which is form a government with the left and Lapid. And then also he pledged repeatedly and also signed this, that he wouldn't form a government with there's an Arab party here in Israel. And I'm very much for integration with Israeli for the Israeli Arab community. In fact, it's been a cornerstone. It was a cornerstone of our last election here for Netanyahu. But there's one Arab party that happens to be basically like the Muslim Brotherhood of Israel. And Lapid and Bennett runs pledging not to form a government with him, and then he does. So this
wait,
is not.
So wait. So to an American trying to follow this Byzantine parliamentary system that Israel follows, the coalition was put together, cobbled together with some of the most disparate political organizations imaginable. Those who hated each other are now working together, right? I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, basically, to be prime minister, you need the backing of 61, which is a slim majority, 61 seats in the 120-seat Knesset. So Bennett, by the way, when he was originally, when he announced his candidacy this last time, according to polls, but I had very different polls, he was like at 18 or 20 mandates of the 120 seat Knesset. He ended up with 7 mandates. In other words, 5%. His party is now 5% of the whole Knesset. He has very few mandates. And of those 7, one member of his party doesn't want to be a part of this coalition. So the guy has 6%. Bennett has 6%. Sorry, 6 mandates in the 120-seat Knesset. So this is the first time in Israeli history where you have an individual who leads a party that has only 5% of the Knesset. And then keep in mind that the vast majority of those, of the people who voted for him, didn't want him to form this rotating government with the center left. So
he's a Machiavellian. He did what he had to do to seize power. He's not an all around nice guy. The average American listener, Aaron, to this podcast is going to say, OK, I hear you. We're not that interested in every detail. I am, but they may not be. What does it mean? What does this mean for Israel and the United States, this new relationship with Naftali?
I mean, what I'm looking at is how I want to see how Naftali Bennett, the new prime minister, will be able to govern. And you have different elements of that, including the relationship with the Biden administration. You have the Biden administration now has a lot of people from the former Obama administration. It's, you know, sort of the same cast of characters. And we're talking about two things that are very important for Israel and also, by the way, for Western civilization. In fact, I can boil it down to even one thing, and that is Iran, the threat of Iran going nuclear.
Right. And that's the question. Will Naftali be tougher on Iran or softer?
His rhetoric says that he's going to stay the same, but you look at his coalition. So now he's got, instead of coming to the right and forming a government with Likud, which he could have done, but instead, I guess he had this personal ambition to be prime minister with his 6 mandates. Again, most of his voters there don't support this. So he did. Okay, it's over for now. So he has now a coalition of the center and the left. And this includes many politicians who actually have been very supportive of the were supportive of Obama's dangerous deal with Iran.
Many of the politicians in the coalition that's now going to rule Israel were in agreement with Obama's soft on Iran policies, basically.
Yes, we have the Meretz party, which is a very far leftist party, led by Mirav Mikhaeli, who's a character here who says that don't send your children to the Israel Defense Forces. You know, that's where she's coming from.
Her name?
Mirav Mikhaeli. She's the head of the Meretz party, which is.
Is she Jewish?
She's Jewish. It's like a socialist party, old school socialist style party.
And she says, "Don't send your children to the IDF." Wow. So who's going to who's going to defend the country? Psychologists.
Exactly. And by the way, it gets worse. So then there's Mirav Mikhaeli is the head of the Labor Party, and she says, "Don't send your children to the IDF." Then you have Nitzan Horowitz, who's the head of the Meretz Party. He actually agreed with the Hague, the International Criminal Court, when they recently scandalously had this anti-Semitic these anti-Semitic charging the IDF, the most moral military in the world, with war crimes for defending itself against terrorists in the Gaza Strip. He agreed with that. So
the Likud agreed with them?
No, that the head of another one of the leftist partners of Naftali Bennett. His name is Nitzan Horowitz.
So he sounds like a blood brother of Ilhan Omar.
Well, by the way, you have her blood brothers and sisters in the other partner of Naftali Bennett, which is the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood style ROM party. So wow. Now how is Bennett going to stand up to the massive pressure on Iran when you have that kind of mentality? And also Yair Lapid, who is like center, let's say, he strongly opposed Prime Minister Netanyahu when Netanyahu went to the U.S. Congress in 2015 to vocally oppose Obama's nuclear deal with Iran. And I mean, that just goes to show you the foresight that some of these people have, because Netanyahu, when he did that, when he went to Congress and stood, and by the way, it wasn't a Democrat-Republican issue, he was just standing up to the dangerous Iran nuclear deal. When he did that, it had huge reverberations. In fact, it's the public pressure and the pressure that was put on domestically and then internationally that led to many moderate Arab countries here saying, wow, you know, this guy's standing up for stuff that we don't even publicly talk so much about.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Savage Nation podcast. Be sure to sign up for the Savage Exclusive Club. It's only $3.99 a month. What a deal. I suggest you join now.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We're back with Aaron Klein. I want everyone to look at the Savage Exclusive Club, only $3.99 a month. You don't know what you're missing yet, but you will see very soon what you're missing. Once you join, you'll say, why did I wait so long? Aaron, I need to ask you a question that the average person listening to this podcast might be interested in, and that's the relationship of Donald Trump to Netanyahu. They were great friends, and as we all know, you were deeply involved in it, probably. The U.S. Embassy was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. There was no war as a result. The minute Biden comes into office, as I predicted, you had a war within, 100 days with Hamas and the others in the Gaza Strip. Are you expecting any immediate changes in day-to-day life in Israel with regard to Gaza, for example?
Well, I mean, I hope that the enemies of Israel don't look at this coalition that is here in Israel and smell weakness. I would hope for the security of Israel that, but there's concern about that.
Because they will smell weakness. They'll see a shaky coalition filled with Arabs and leftists and communists and some guy who makes believe he's a lover of Israel, and they're going to go for the throat.
And then how are they going? Let's say tomorrow, I hope this doesn't happen. Let's rewind a few weeks, and let's say that Naftali Bennett were prime minister with this same coalition a few weeks ago when Hamas launched this unprovoked rocket war against Israeli cities a few weeks ago, targeting including rockets on Jerusalem. And then also Hamas attempted actual attacks inside Israel itself.
And Hamas's pretext was that the Israelis were going to seize the Temple Mount, which was a lie.
You know, I can't even believe that Palestinians even buy into that anymore, because it's just this age old lie that they keep recycling. Like, Israel's the only country in the whole Middle East where all religions, Jews, Arabs, Christians can pray unrestricted.
I know. I've been to Israel. I couldn't believe it. You know, I went there. I was the typical American. I was pro-Israel, but I really didn't know anything about it. I was shocked to see Arabs driving over from the West Bank in Mercedes-Benz. Then Aaron, I wanted, when I spoke to the professors at Hebrew University, they said to me, what do you want to see first? I said, I want to see the Wailing Wall. And one of them sneered and he said, why do you want to see the rubble of the old temple? He said, go to the top of the wall and you will see the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which was built on the rubble of the original temple. As an American who was fairly well educated, I knew nothing about it, Aaron. So you can imagine what the average worldview is, you know.
A lot of people don't even realize that the Wailing Wall is like an outer retaining wall, and that actually the holiest site in Judaism is the Temple Mount. And it's the media in this last few weeks that then takes Hamas's lies that this is the country that where Jews, Arabs, and Muslims, Christians can pray freely, a country that allows that where you have a large number of Muslims every year go up to the Temple Mount, that somehow they're blocking Muslims from going on the Temple Mount. Total Hamas propaganda. And yet the media, international media across the board, promoted that lie when in actuality Hamas launched the war against Israel, this recent war, because for domestic reasons. But bottom line, Abbas, the Fatah party, the Palestinian Authority, unilaterally canceled elections where Hamas was going to do very well. So
now look, they wanted Aaron, you were a chief strategist for Netanyahu's successful election campaign. You know things you can't say on this show, and I wouldn't push you to say things. But I have questions. I'm looking at the Jerusalem Post right now. Bennett Netanyahu handover meeting lasts only 25 minutes. Netanyahu declines to take part in the traditional ceremony. A brief meeting took place behind closed doors. Gantz advances investigative committee into Meron disaster. So already they're trying to stab someone else in the back. Lapid to take over, lead over Bennett on foreign ties, peace with Arab states. I read last week that Egypt was making machinations to take over the Gaza Strip, for example. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know anything about Egypt taking over Gaza, nor do I think Egypt would want to take over the Gaza Strip. I don't think they would want the responsibility of or a war with Hamas, which is what they would get if they do that. But let's you know, you read all those things to me and like think about what is Bennett with this coalition going to do about any of that? Because if there were a war with Hamas, let's say he's got Hamas's arm almost of the Muslim Brotherhood in the coalition, Mansour Abbas and his Islam party. So how is it? This is a party and there are surrogates that have also accused Israel of all sorts of outrageous things for protecting itself. So with Bennett right now has a coalition where if one member of this 61 member coalition of the Knesset doesn't want to agree with the government, they could potentially try to bring it down. So what's going to happen, unfortunately, if you have such a war? Or how is Israel going to defend itself, which they have to do now, against the Hague International Criminal Court, given you have people in there who are one person who agrees with it, but of the Biden administration. And, you know, the Bennett.
Yeah,
says,
wait, no, Aaron, this is a big deal. I want to go back to what I frame this as. New King David. Oh, I said King David leaves. A new King David comes in. If you want to call them both the same, I probably know that you don't believe that. But they're both very tough guys. I mean, they both have a pretty strong military background, both special forces, right? I mean, that's the thing about Israel and different from America. You can't be a leader in Israel unless you've served with distinction in the armed forces. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Bennett served. I know he was in the elite unit, but I do not believe that he did anything there with distinction.
Okay,
not to
fair
contrast.
Enough. But what about Yair Lapid, the foreign minister designate? He's a tough guy, former boxer, weightlifter, rugged individualist. What, is he another one? He's a tough guy or not?
Well, look, you have a lot of tough guys in the U.S. military, and then when they come into politics, you see that they have very different stances.
Okay,
so.
good point. I the gong just went off. Of course, the minute they come into politics, they become doves, or worse yet. Absolutely true. So, you know, I look upon Israel as a quasi-Spartan state, meaning it's always at war, even though it looks like Los Angeles in Tel Aviv, and people go about their daily lives as though they're in Los Angeles. It's still a nation, Aaron, which you know better than I, that's sort of like Sparta. It's potentially at war any minute. America doesn't even understand war. They don't respect the military. They could care less if a presidential candidate who's running for office ever served in the military. It's two different universes. So is there going to be a change in the relationship between the U.S. and Israel in your estimation?
I hope that there won't be, but what you do have, I also see the change coming on Iran. That's where the change is. That's the major change. And again, this is not even about like Republican or Democrat. When it comes to Israel, the leadership here, only they look at what is in the best interest of Israeli security, which in the case of Iran, and in all cases, as far as I know, happens to be in the best interest of Western civilization. And so I obviously the coming clash is going to be largely on Iran and on the pending nuclear deal. Is it going to be very similar to Obama's with the sunset clause, with all sorts of other clauses where Iran was
Let's talk about the Iran nuclear deal for 1 minute. In plain English, Obama gave them the ability to build nuclear weapons. That's what I was reading at that time. And the left said, great, well, Israel has them. Why shouldn't they have them? The difference is Israel didn't threaten the world. Iran has threatened every surrounding neighbor. What do you think would happen if Biden goes to the far left, which he's been doing anyway, and those who are running Biden anyway, and they do give Iran the green light to build a nuclear weapon? What's going to happen then?
Yeah, I mean, what they did with Obama was it was like on low grade. It was like they didn't give that. It wasn't a nuclear weapon, but they were allowed to maintain an enrichment program that kept them perpetually like a few months away from a nuclear weapon.
Come on, you and I both know they were working on it. But Aaron, come on, you and I both know that it was a green light to go ahead, do what you want. We won't, you know, we'll look the other way. Yeah, and they were racing towards a nuclear weapon, the same way every other dictatorship has. And so the difference is most of the people who are member of the nuclear club are constrained by civilization and concerns about civilization. Iran is a theocracy run by 12th century mullahs. They're not constrained by anything except their view of the world, which is Armageddon. They're liable to nuke Israel.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. It is Armageddon. They actually believe that for their Messiah, the Mehdi, to come back, they actually need to bring this like apocalyptic world battle of like good. And they, of course, believe that they're good versus evil, which will be Israel and the United States. And that's the major difference. And also, you're right that they were secretly building nuclear weapons, because we know that Prime Minister Netanyahu at the time sent the Mossad in 2018 to raid Iran's secret nuclear archive and then find evidence of all that. So that's what we're looking at now for the coming clash between Bennett with his center left coalition and people who criticize Netanyahu for standing up to Iran and then the nuclear deal. That's the coming clash between Bennett and Biden. But also you have the issue of like settlements of Jews building in Jewish areas. And it's like, for some reason, different U.S. administrations, I believe, including this one, seem to be obsessed with the issue of Jews building in already existing Jewish communities in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. So Biden's going to also have to Bennett's going to also have to possibly stand up to Biden on that. And Bennett, unfortunately, also has this coalition with people who are opposed to Jews having a presence or building in those territories. But Iran is the biggest thing.
We'll be right back with more from Aaron Klein right here on the Savage Nation podcast. Thanks for listening.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
We're back with Aaron Klein. Who is the head of the IDF?
That would be Benny Gantz right now. Well, Aviv Kochavi is the head of the IDF. He's the sort of the Israeli equivalent of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But then Benny Gantz is the defense minister. And Gantz is quite the dove also on these issues. And
I look,
and also,
it says Gantz advances investigative committee into Iran disaster. That was the artillery barrage that killed civilians by accident.
No, that was a disaster at a holy place for ultra-Orthodox Jews. And he's I just sometimes when you have these government committees, I hope that it doesn't turn into politics. I hope they're looking for the truth.
Oh, the Iran disaster in which 45 people died in a mass crush on Lag BaOmer. But what does that have to do with Israel? What does that have to do with anybody? With too many people on a grandstand and it collapsed, right?
Yeah, but you have questions about like who authorized, did the police say that it was safe? Is anybody in politics, including it happens to be Gantz's political opposition, did they have anything? Did they give it the stamp of kosher?
Well, Aaron, there were rumors that some of the exits were blocked and people trampled each other. And then they were arguing that some politicians in Israel wanted to kill off the Orthodox. Is that kind of the rumor?
No, no one wanted to kill off the Orthodox. If anything, I don't know specifically. That's why a real investigative body should be set up to save lives and see what really happens there. I just hope that this investigative body also doesn't become political, because you have politicians, including from the Likud party and the ultra-Orthodox parties, that were the heads of the police or the committee that was overseeing this. But clearly, it does need to be investigated. I just hope it doesn't turn to politics. But, you know, like looking from afar, when there's bad news, always Israel is always threatened by enemies. But also, like Netanyahu, really, for now, Israel is in a very good place on many fronts. I mean, really. Israel has an amazing economy. Because of Netanyahu's decades-long economic policy, Netanyahu got Israel first out of, in the whole world, out of Corona with the vaccine program. He signs 4 peace deals with Arab nations. I like to call it the Netanyahu doctrine of peace in exchange for peace from strength instead of peace for evacuating territory. So Israel, right now, Bennett is taking over Israel from a very good position, and I think the economy will continue, hopefully, to do well if the radical left element of Bennett's coalition don't get their hands on the economy.
We're speaking with Aaron Klein, and he doesn't. There's no one closer to Mr. Netanyahu than Aaron. I'm sure of that. Maybe other than Mr. Netanyahu's wife, and Aaron is a friend of mine. This is a cataclysm, though, Aaron, isn't it? Isn't this a cataclysm in Israeli politics and in the world of the Middle East? What happens?
It really is. And Netanyahu is a giant. He's the Winston Churchill of our day. And let me tell you,
look what they did to Winston Churchill after they didn't need him in World War II.
Exactly. The difference is that I think people will very quickly. Here, this was not the will of the voters. In fact, when you have a direct election, let's say, where you have Netanyahu versus any other candidate, including Naftali Bennett for a prime minister in a direct election.
Let's say it's the American system, and it would have been Republican versus Democrat, to make it simple. And for the sake of this discussion, Netanyahu is the R and Naftali is the D. What would the results have been? 80-20, 70-30?
Yeah, it would be some. It would definitely be like closer to 70-30, and it's still, which is still a trouncing. And if you put him against any of the others, it would still be the same. In fact, before Naftali Bennett formed this strange coalition with his six mandates, we offered him and the whole Knesset repeatedly to do direct elections, which would be the most democratic thing, to see who they want as prime minister. And there have been so many public polls you released all the time, and everybody sees the public prefers Netanyahu. But, you know, as a person, like, he's unbelievable. I mean, I had the opportunity of working many hours every day with him for the last 2 years, spending most of my day and nights with him, actually. And I've never seen anything like it in my life, really. I mean, like, the energy level, though, this guy does not stop for a minute, and that's not an exaggeration. He never stops working on behalf of the Jewish state from the minute.
Well, this is probably going to have a very serious effect upon him psychologically and emotionally and physically. I mean, the fact is, this is a real body blow to him, isn't it?
No, I think he's fine. This is a guy who has been through a lot. I mean, he early in his career, when he was serving in the IDF elite unit, he was shot in the shoulder, releasing hostages from a hijacked flight. He was almost killed in a firefight in the Yom Kippur War. I mean, he went through political battle. He's been prime minister 15 years. Yeah, when you're prime minister of Israel for 15 years, I think you've seen and dealt with just about everything. So for him, he's really okay. I mean, I was with him all day yesterday. I just spoke with him a few minutes ago. He's more than fine. He's the opposition leader and will be the next candidate from the right for prime minister. And I don't think this government is going to last that long.
In the parliamentary system, how soon can new elections be held?
Tomorrow, this is the dysfunction of the parliamentary system here, because there isn't so much stability. If Naftali Bennett now has a coalition that has exactly 61 seats of the 120 seat Knesset, so what that means is that
sounds like Joe Biden.
No, but the difference is Biden is now president for 4 years. That's
sure. We're stuck with him, even though we don't like him, even though he's wrecking the economy and destroying everything that Trump built. We can't do a damn thing about it. We got to watch that. But in Israel, that's why I like the parliamentary system. You can dissolve a government tomorrow, correct? Not you. I mean,
the government could be dissolved literally tomorrow if because you have this hodgepodge of center, left, so-called right. And, you know, they claim they're not going to deal with ideological issues. I mean, that's impossible. Sitting with Netanyahu for the last 2 years, I can tell you everything is a so-called ideological issue every day. I mean, this is a very dysfunctional government, and it could be brought down on its own at any time. And when it does, if and when it does, then Netanyahu will be the candidate again.
On his way out the door, he gave a speech yesterday at the Knesset. And he compared what went on to Roosevelt not bombing the railways leading to the extermination camps. I mean, that was pretty severe, because he said, we hope for others to save us, and they didn't come. In the face of the threat of extermination, we were helpless. He was talking about what happened then, the Jewish people. And he said, our voice was not heard among the nations. We had neither a state or an army, but today we do have a voice. We have a state. We have a defensive power. Did you write that speech?
I was very involved in.
Okay. Isn't that interesting? So how can you make such a comparison? Meaning, what does this have to do with not bombing the railways to Auschwitz?
Well, I should say Netanyahu writes all of his speeches. I just was.
You just provided the pen. I get it.
But what he was talking about in that case wasn't Naftali Bennett. It was that back then, with the case of opposition to or trying to raise a voice and to pressure Roosevelt to bomb the train tracks, and there was no state of Israel, there was no Jewish power as there is today. Today we have a voice, and we are going, and Israel must raise it when it comes to existential threats like Iran. And he was warning that if the incoming administration here in Israel, well, now the administration, if they don't raise their voice to any world leader who would allow Iran to get nuclear weapons, then that is equivalent. And he's saying that back then there was no state of Israel. to complain to Roosevelt and to pressure him into bombing the train tracks and stopping the Jews from going to the extermination camps. Today, we have the State of Israel. We have one of the strongest militaries in the world, the IDF. Israel is a regional superpower.
And yeah, but you need the will to use it. We have the greatest military on earth without will to use it. One last thing, Aaron. I know you're busy. What a big day it is for you. Barak Ravid, I don't know who he is. I assume he's a left-wing columnist in Israel. Is that true?
Yeah, I know who he is.
Okay, listen to what he says. A senior Israeli diplomat told me Netanyahu's attacks against the Biden administration in his speech show he decided to damage the U.S.-Israel relationship for his own personal interest and is trying to leave scorched earth for the incoming government. What do you think?
No, that's ridiculous. In fact, you had the same cries from the left, including, again, from members of Bennett's party, when Netanyahu spoke against the issue of the Iran nuclear deal, when he spoke out against Obama, and they were saying that Netanyahu was damaging Israel's relationships and that Israel would be more isolated than ever because Netanyahu was speaking out against the Obama administration on Iran. And quite the opposite.
It was, you know, I don't know how you survive, Aaron. I have to live. You've been involved in the maelstrom of Israeli politics, and you're still alive. That unto itself, you should get a Nobel Prize for that one.
Well, but, look, you know what it is? I have to say that some of it is that I take the only break that I take during the day is like running or working out. And like I said, I actually listen to your show during that. So
I'll tell you what, when Netanyahu comes back to power, you can make me a senior advisor to yourself, and I'll move to Israel.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I would love that.
Yeah, I would love it, too, after what's going on. The riots in America and the insanity of the Biden administration, the hatred for white people. It may be the one place I have left to go to. Aaron, there's so much more we can talk about. I know it's a busy day. It's a cataclysm. The changing of the guard in Israel changes the dynamics, not only in Israel, but the Israel-U.S. relationship, the U.S.-Israel-Iran relationship. Let alone the relationship between the United States and the other Arab nations. We don't know what's going to happen. You probably know more than I do in the chess games that are being played. I would imagine you've run every scenario humanly possible by computers and by playing brains. And I hope you can come back and join us in the future on the Savage Nation podcast. Any last thoughts, Aaron Klein?
I would just say that I hope that that this government stands strong against the enemies of Israel and of Western civilization. But I think its very composition sort of doesn't allow that fully. And Netanyahu is going to be a very vocal, very strong opposition because he's not opposing politicians. He's standing up for Israel on the world stage. He'll continue to do that.
Well, I hope that the listeners to the Savage Nation podcast can make a difference. We are in the top 0.4 or 0.5% of podcasts. There's a huge audience. It's a silent audience because we're not on the radio. We're not on television. And yet people who listen to this show are very influential amongst their own circles, Aaron. And I so much appreciate you taking time out today from Jerusalem on this historic day. And I thank you again. Please stay in touch and please send our regards to the great Benjamin Netanyahu.
I will. Thank you so much, and I'll send the regard.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
Oh, boy, do I need a cup of coffee right now. I mean, the inflation is out of control. Biden is stumbling around in Europe, doesn't know where he is or what he's doing. He put down the Declaration of Independence. But hey, everything's great. Look at the white people in the suburbs. They're all so happy. What are the new news headlines today? There's quite a few. A Democrat, meaning a communist, is exploring a Patriot tax on wealth. See how they twist everything? Notice that Patriot tax on wealth. Don't you love that? What does that mean? Democrat exploring Patriot tax on multimillionaires' wealth. Representative communist Thomas Suozzi, D. New York, you could call it a C. New York, a member of the Tax Writing House Ways and Means Committee. He's exploring the idea of a one-time tax on the wealth of the richest Americans as communists seek to increase taxes on the rich, meaning those who have earned it, in order to pay for the bums in the streets. In an interview with The Hill on Friday, Suozzi said he's in the early stages of looking at what he called a Patriot tax. Don't you love that? That's right out of the communist playbook. Steal your money and call it patriotism as they take your money away. This would be a one-time surcharge of 2.5% on wealth between $50 million and $100 million and a 5% tax on wealth above $100 million. Wealthy people would be able to pay the tax over 5 years. You know, that's very kind of them. Now, what they're not telling you is that wealthy people have already paid taxes on it. Where's the money going to go? Well, let's say you've got the gangsters in Congress. They got to have, you know, they got to get their beaks wet. And of course, well, you got all of the bums in the street who are rioting. They need the money. Then you got the minority crime wave. They need the money. Then you got to pay for the illegal aliens somehow. They need the money, right? So there you go. So Swoozy, the communist, would help pay for Biden's scam of infrastructure proposals. You hear that? Are you listening to this? That's what's going on in the country right now. Tax, 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 spend, spend, spend. Tax and spend, there's nothing new under the sun. It's called the Democrat Socialist Communist Administration of America. Let's see, what else can I throw you? Biden accused of violating royal protocol during visit with Queen. What did he do? Oh, he wore shades to look cool? Ah, schmuck. I'm not a fan of the Queen anyway. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't like royalty or royalism. But he's an embarrassment. Look at the wife with him, with the hand over the heart. Does she have a heart? Biden accused of violating royal protocol during visit with Queen. What did the schmuck do now? President Biden is being slammed for violating royal protocol in his meeting with the Queen after he couldn't be bothered to take off his sunglasses when he greeted the monarch at Windsor Castle and then went on to spill details to the press about what they discussed over tea. Blah, blah, blah. He's with Jill Biden, G7 summit, told the media at Heathrow Airport that the 95-year-old royal was interested in hearing more about Russian President Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping. And he went on to tell about it, of course, because he couldn't control his vomit mouth. Revealing private details of a conversation with the Queen is a royal faux pas. But what would he know? He's from Baltimore.
She wanted to know what the two leaders that I wanted to meet with, Mr. Putin, and she wanted to know about Xi Jinping, and we had a long talk, and she was very generous, very... I don't think she'd be insulted, but you bet my mother. She reminded me of my mother. In terms of the look of her and, you know, just the generosity. And I said, you know, ma'am, this is, you know, it's a long time. She said, oh, no. I said, I wish we could stay longer. Maybe we could hold the cars up a minute. So anyway, she was very gracious.
A former butler to the royals pointed out that when someone meets the Queen face to face, there's no sunglasses or anything like that. But since Biden's the coolest cat in the room, he's got to wear the sunglasses. The Queen is supposed to have told Michelle Obama that royal protocol was rubbish. It has nonetheless been a rule that an audience with the Queen is strictly private and to reveal its contents is a breach of trust, royal commentator Richard Fitzwilliams told the Daily Mail. He went on. President Biden, by revealing to the Queen had asked about the Russian and Chinese leaders, did breach this rule. It is very possible that as the G7 sees itself as a bulwark of democracy against regimes such as Russia and China, that this comment may have been prearranged in line with this theme, he added. Who knows? Look, Biden's a schmuck. He's not ready for prime time. He's a loser. He's senile. He's listening to the far left. No one knows who's really running the country, but we know it's not him. He made other gaffes. Grant Harrell, the former butler, Prince Charles and Camilla, said Biden should have ditched the shades immediately instead of halfway through the ceremony, even if the sun was bright and temperatures rose into the 80s. Blah, blah, blah. It's fine for Biden to have sunglasses on, but he should have removed them when he actually met the Queen. What's he trying to be, like a jazz singer? Everyone in the house to do it. Doesn't matter who you are. Even royals remove sunglasses when they meet royals, he said. It's one of those rules I always write about in my etiquette text. It's a breach of protocol. I get the sun might have been shining in his eyes, but the Queen didn't have sunglasses on. Jill, the First Lady, didn't have sunglasses on, Harold said. But the imposter had the sunglasses on. Okay, so my friends, that's the news of the day. Big deal. He wore sunglasses. That should be his biggest problem. But it's indicative of who the schmuck is, you know? What now? What else do we have? Here's another horrible story, I swear to God. Okay, COVID. Let's give you a COVID story. The main symptoms of COVID appear to have changed. Expert warns. That means I could have it now? I should run to Dr. Fauci for the truth? What's the new symptoms? Now headaches and sore throats. Oh, I have COVID. You wake up with a headache, you have COVID. the main symptoms of COVID-19 appear to have changed, with headaches and sore throats now more common than fevers and coughs, according to a warning by UK experts. COVID is acting differently now. It's more like a cold, said Tim Spector, professor of genetic epidemiology, who's been tracking symptoms through the pandemic. Now the most likely warning sign is a headache. I've had one every day for the last 20 years, followed by a sore throat and runny nose. I've had one through allergy season. All those are not the old classic symptoms, he said, with the previous main indicators of fever and cough. Now the fourth and fifth most likely symptoms. They're not sure why the symptoms of COVID have changed, although one theory is that it reflects the spread of the highly contagious Indian variant, with Dr. Anthony Slouchy warned could become the most dominant in the U.S. This variant seems to be working slightly differently. Another theory is that younger people are now catching the virus and reporting milder symptoms. Either way, the fear is that people are infected but aren't realizing it. The scientist said, people might think they've got some sort of seasonal cold and they still go out to parties and they might spread it around. So in other words, stay home, wear a mask, shut your mouth, and listen to Dr. Slouchy, take 17 injections, and don't do anything in your life. Spector mentioned other symptoms to watch for: shortness of breath, fatigue, diarrhea, vomiting, or loss of taste or smell. Even that does not include all possible symptoms, the CDC warns. So in other words, whatever you have, you should be afraid that you have COVID-19 and put on a mask, dummy up, shut your mouth, and pay your taxes. All right. Nothing to see here. Let's move on. Let's see what else is in the news. Who is Kim Jong-un's niece or sister? I'm not interested already. Is he still threatening to fire bombs off? I don't know what he's doing now over there in Korea. I don't like whatever he's doing. They need a change of leadership there, let alone in Israel. They changed in Israel after 12 years. This family of the Un family, or is it the Kim family? I don't really know Korean well enough to know. But this family has ruled Korea, North Korea, since the 50s, like a mafia, like a cartel. Teen with hands up tased for vaping on boardwalk. It's shocking. No, this is sickening. Here's a guy, a black guy. He's walking on a boardwalk in New Jersey. Or Baltimore, sorry. And all he did was vape. And cops say, stop vaping. He didn't do it fast enough. They tased him and knocked him to the ground. You know, it's sickening. I'm sorry, this is sickening. China releases new images of Mars taken by its Zhurong rover. I hope they have good Chinese food on Mars. That's all I can say. And it better be low in oil, low sugar, and no MSG. Millions of sleep apnea devices recalled over potential cancer risks. Philips is recalling millions of devices, blah, blah, blah. Oh, God. Judge tosses hospital workers reprehensible vaccine lawsuit. Oh, I don't know. 15-year-old girl killed by lightning while swimming at beach. That's a heartbreaker. Search for sea turtles turns up $1.2 million in cocaine instead. Take TNC. Meanwhile, Netanyahu attacked Biden on the way out the door. Did you see that story? Well, what else is in the news? There's so much more. I know it's terrible, but I actually do need another cup of coffee, to be honest with you. I mean, Israel's the biggest story because Netanyahu being out and Naftali being in and Netanyahu blasting Biden his way out of the office, that is a big deal. And we'll have to see where that scorched earth policy leads us to, which will, come up in the days to come. Let's go to Breitbart.com. Joe confuses Syria with Libya three times.
We could work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. Russia has engaged in activities which we believe are contrary to international norms, but they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, of, you know, this is, they're there. I'm hopeful that we can find an accommodation that where we can save the lives of people in, for example, in Libya.
Oh, boy. Biden spoke about the tariffs during a press conference on Sunday after a reporter challenged the president's repeated assertion that America is back. G7 cringe overload. Biden's sleepy, snippy with reporters. He says, it's 120 days. Give me a break. I need time. Biden refers to COVAX vaccine program as COVID. Established media worries Kamala, White House chances slipping away. Play slipping and sliding. Globalist 7 promise green revolution as they fly home on their private jets, those lying filth. Kevin Hart hammers cancel culture mob, shut the F up. I don't know who Kevin Hart is, but it's a good thing. Meanwhile, in Chicago, 43 was shot over the weekend. New York's running a close second under de Blasio. They're running to see who can be first in the number of people killed by gun violence. UK scientist warns heading for substantial third wave. Right. Finland's millennial feminist government suffers local defeat. Austin shooting incident between two parties. I wonder who the parties were. Were they rabbis, priests? Oh, I'm sorry. They were violent minorities again. Let's see what else is in the news. Federal judge halts Biden's $4 billion plan to compensate farmers based on being black or Hispanic. I hope that sticks. John Voight scorches racist Hunter Biden and media double standards. LGBTQ writers demand more Hollywood jobs, punishment of states with anti-trans legislation. Can I ask you a question? How many more minorities or LGBTQ characters can you have on ads and in Hollywood? Have you seen any straight white males recently other than morons who drop pie in their faces? How do you like that? Okay, my friends, that's enough for right now. I'll be back with more on the Savage Nation podcast.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
All right, here we are, another day, another holler on the Savage podcast. So what's going on in the world? Well, take a guess who's taking over Israel. Someone you don't know named Bennett. And who is Bennett? I don't know Bennett. You know who he is? Bennett is the tech millionaire son of Berkeley left wingers. That is taking over. That's what's taking over Israel. The millionaire son, a tech millionaire son of Berkeley left wingers is going to be ruling Israel. But there's an interesting side to this story. He is not a left winger. He's actually a right wing multimillionaire. And he was raised by two UC Berkeley graduates. He's lived in Israel, Canada, and the U.S. Now, Naftali Bennett, as I said, it's very interesting, has two parents. He was born in the port city of Haifa in 1972. He descends from Holocaust survivors on his mother's side and has Polish, German, and Dutch roots. Now, listen to this. His parents, Myrna and Jim Bennett, are American but now live in Haifa. They were left-wingers from Berkeley. They visited Israel for a vacation after the Six-Day War in 1967 and ended up settling there, right? And what happened then? They were left-wingers in the U.S. They were against the Vietnam War. They went to Berkeley. They said, we were automatically like left-wingers. When we came to Israel, I felt I loved the place I was living in, said his mom in 2013. So he was raised in a modern Orthodox Jewish home in Haifa, Israel. And he grew up in an atmosphere that was very Zionist and very right-wing. He became very nationalistic once he lived in Israel and he saw what was what. He attended a religious coeducational school. He was not a great academician, according to a former teacher. And he began his compulsory military service with the IDF in 1990. He's a fighter. He served in the Special Forces Unit tasked with counterterrorism missions and hostage rescue outside of Israel's borders, the Sayeret Matkal. He was a company commander of the elite Maglan unit. Now, this is an amazing thing to understand, how tough you have to be of mind and spirit to be in special forces in any country, and especially in the counterterrorism units in Israel. His role in one military operation known as the Operation Grapes of Wrath, or the April Aggression, is considered controversial because he did his job. In April of 1996, Mr. Bennett was the commander of Maglan unit of 67 warriors. While in Qana, a village in southern Lebanon, his unit came under heavy fire from Hezbollah fighters. So naturally, the attackers fled into a nearby UN compound, which was sheltering hundreds of Lebanese civilians. That's what they do. So Mr. Bennett radioed for support against the Hezbollah mortar team, who was trying to kill his men. And the IDF artillery fired 36 high explosive shells in retaliation. By mistake, 13 shells struck the UN compound, killing 106 civilians in what is now called a massacre by the Arabs. Now, you have to understand, it's horrible, but it's called war. It's kill or be killed. Nevertheless, the left is saying he's a killer. I have no other comments to make about this. Bennett himself called these charges a vanity of vanities, nonsense. Other officers who were there, familiar with the incident, dismissed the charges and said that Bennett displayed level-headedness, according to the Jerusalem Post. Bennett went on to boast, saying, quote, "I already killed lots of Arabs in my life, and there is absolutely no problem with that," according to the Washington Post. Yeah, right, Washington Post. Right, sure, Washington Post, filled with left-wing scum. Bennett is still a reservist, ranked as a major, and was called up during the 06 Lebanon War. And the fact of the matter is, after his military service, Bennett studied for a law degree at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, great university. In 1999, he married his wife, Gilat, a professional pastry chef from a secular Israeli family. The couple has four children. Now listen to this. In the early 2000s, he moves to New York City and launches his career as a software entrepreneur and lives in the affluent Upper East Side of Manhattan. Then he founds an anti-fraud software company, Cyata, which he eventually sold in 2005 to RSA Security for $145 million. Then he goes back to Israel as a reservist in 2006, and he begins his political career. He serves as Netanyahu's chief of staff from 2006 to 2008. He helps Netanyahu win his primary campaign to lead the Likud in 2007. Then in 2009, Mr. Bennett becomes the CEO of Saluto, a now-defunct software company. He then stands down from the role in that company and goes back to politics and becomes Director General of the Yesha Council, a pro-settlement group of organizations. In 2010, he founds a right-wing political organization, My Israel, with Zionist firebrand Ayelet Shahed. That's a little bit of the background. So Mr. Bennett was the right-hand man of Netanyahu. That's the way it works. That's the way the world works. That's the way politics works. And I can guarantee you he'll become the most hated person in the world the minute he stands up for the nation that needs someone to love them so much. Many of you have requested an ad-free version of the Savage Nation podcast. Well, how would you like to join this exclusive club that I'm starting up now? It's dedicated to borders, language, and culture. You already listen to the Savage Nation podcast, and I really appreciate that. We're making a difference. Well, now there's a new offer I'm going to tell you about. After months of careful consideration and preparation, we've come up with a premium offering called the Savage Exclusive. What does it include? 100% commercial-free podcast, no ads. 26 years of the most requested Savage shows and portions of shows. The great monologues, the poems, the stories, the nutty callers, exclusive Savage soliloquies, and the Savage library of shows, some of which date back to 1994 on KSFO. You're not going to believe this. We're going to give you the most requested Savage shows of the past, such as The Death Poem, The First Savage Trump Interview, White Male Inventions, Apathy and Jazz, and many, many more. Plus, you're going to get fresh, original Michael Savage features you cannot hear on the basic podcast, such as a look behind the scenes of how we actually make a podcast, all of us talking with each other, readings from my novels and books, travels around my hometown, as I tell you what it's like to walk through San Francisco today. All of the above for less than the cost of one drink in a bar per month. So listen, if you still believe in borders, language, and culture as the guiding principles of this great nation, as I do, please consider joining the Savage Exclusive Club. Please know we will never dilute the basic podcast you get on your podcast service every week with my news, views, reviews, and special topics. If you did not join the Exclusive Club, you will still get the basic podcast absolutely free. Details will be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com. There's lots more for me to tell you about. I'm going to give you a link right now. And if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm/savagepremium. 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 If you click on it, you're going to see a cartoon of me. Join Savage's exclusive club with the rate, and you just click and you join. You're going to love it. I appreciate it very much. I hope you join the Savage exclusive club. Thank you for listening. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed and learned something from it. And I want to remind you of something that I think is important for you to know. We have over 280 Savage Nation podcast episodes available to you absolutely free. I'll say that again. You can go back into this vast library of over 280 episodes and listen to any one of them or several of them at your leisure. So you never have to be without the Savage Nation. Thank you very much for listening.